Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Story Break, the Writer's Room podcast, where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to turn a humble idea into a pitch for an awesome movie. I'm your host, Freddie Wong. I will try to come up with something about assassins.
Nice.
Good one.
Well, you are an assassin, Freddie, because you killed it on that opening.
Uh-huh.
You assassinated that intro much like I assassinate things when I play Assassin's Creed, which is just to bumble out, fuck up the stealth kill, get into a big fight and run away and give up. I am Will Campos. It is about 900 degrees in my apartment right now. I'm sweating bullets. You're getting raw, dehydrated Will energy today. That's what I can promise you, good people at home listening. Don't say we never did anything for you. We're sweating buckets over here, slaving over a hot laptop to cook this podcast.
My name, which was given to me before all names.
Oh boy, here we go.
Is Matthias Arnadius, the Isu from the Eponius era, a thousand millennium before all of you were here. And I'm here to tell our story with these two mere mortals.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Matt Arnold, expert of Assassin's Creed lore. So let's do this thing.
Our episode this week is about Assassin's Creed, and this is week two of the Max Fun Drive, as you may or may not be well aware.
You were destined to hear about the Max Fun Drive because of your genomic sequencing. We are diving back to the beginning. Ages and ages ago, the Max Funsters waged war with the Gimlet Clan. And for thousands of years since, we have upheld the code of creating quality podcasts for your listening audience that's user-supported, as all true podcasts should be.
Will just straight up wrote like five Assassin's Creed games right there. That was so good. Just off the top of your dome. You got it. You understand the franchise.
At the end of Max Assassin's Creed 2, Jesse Thorne is the Pope and you fight him in a fist fight.
You know what bums me out about podcasts in general is that podcast beef is like so tame. Like, I just want some real beef every so often. You know, it's like everyone's so nice and like public radio-y, you know?
It's so tame that you could have one podcaster kill another podcaster and it wouldn't even make Twitter. That's how tame it is. Whereas like somebody on Twitch could just disappear, like just could be like, hey, they're not on Twitch anymore, and it'll still be in the news for like 3 weeks. Like, that's how nobody cares about podcasters.
Anyway, it's Max Fun Drive.
Good segue into Max Fun Drive.
Yeah.
So that's why we need Max Fun Drive.
Look, we can theorize about how boring the behind-the-scenes world, cutthroat world of podcasting is, and we can only do that because of Max Fun members. This podcast, in fact, can only exist because of you, Max Fun listeners, and those of you who show your support. So we're doing a drive right now. And just to remind you, you're the reasons why we can make this stuff. Max Fun is an audience-supported network, which means that we can basically do whatever we want because we don't got nobody to answer to but you, the adoring listening public.
So here's how this works. You choose a monthly amount that's comfortable for you. The majority of people give $5 a month or $10 a month. Some people upgrade to 20 or 35 or even 100 or more. It's really all about what works for you. You can head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to check out all of the various options.
Again, most people are around $5 to $10 a month, but you can give whatever you want. And there's rewards at all the various levels.
Yeah, Jeff.
20
Bill,
bucks.
Bill. 35. Warren. Mark. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about, Jeff, Bill, Warren, Mark. I see what you guys are donating. You could donate a little bit more. Everybody else, donate what you can. But Jeff Bezos is who I'm talking about.
Really?
Yeah. I don't need that $1 tip from you, man.
I think we're trying to start a podcast beef with Jeff Bezos, the richest and most powerful man on earth. Is that what we're doing right now?
Well, we're about to make him the bad guy in Assassin's Creed, so I don't know if he's going to donate anymore.
We're going to be telling you a little bit more about the drive throughout the show. But for now, gentlemen, I think it's time to dive in to the intrigue and the dense lore and the nail-biting stories of the Assassin's Creed universe.
Assassin's Creed. Matt, can you please give the non-nerds a bit of a primer on what this thing is?
I have a confession to make. I lied to you.
What?
At that beginning, I was reading Wikipedia. I don't know Assassin's Creed
lore.
Are you
Here's fucking
the thing.
Kidding me?
Here's
you
the thing.
You so got us in here. I came in with a really fun idea for today, and then Matt was like, no, let's do Assassin's Creed. I know a ton about Assassin's Creed. I'm going to take you guys through it. I'll hold your hand. Don't worry about it. And now you've fucking abandoned us here in the high seas to drown.
Let me clarify.
Some bullshit, Will.
I love Assassin's Creed. I love it so much. It's one of my favorite.
Why?
It's one of my favorite game franchises because I'm a history nerd, and I love the game, and I even love the lore. I do. I love the idea of the lore, but it is genuinely inscrutable in the same way that Kingdom Hearts is. It's like the idea of the lore is enough for me. I don't need to understand what's being said. It's kind of like a good, you know, Christopher Nolan movie. It's like, I don't quite know why I'm in this dream, but it's like, I get it. So it's good to go. So, like, I'll just go over the basics because I think that's all we need.
Lay it on me. Okay. I will say, in your defense, I have played through
a lot, yeah,
two complete Assassin's Creed games. I played through Assassin's Creed 2 and Black Flag, and I literally could not tell you the first thing about what happened in either game.
Yeah. So look, there are people who generally love the Assassin's Creed lore. They get super into it. I've tried reading their fan fictions and treatises and theses on them. My eyes glaze over. I can't do it. But on a basic level, Assassin's Creed is about the never-ending battle between the Templars, which, you know, take it however you want. Templars are a secret organization, the Illuminati, they're the classic people who's got their fingers in everything and are trying to rule the world
over. The ones pulling the strings.
Yes, the one pulling the
strings.
Fingers
in the pie.
The ones who don't believe humanity can rule themselves but need strong leaders to take care of it for them, right? And then the assassins are the people who are killing them, who are trying to keep the world, who are trying to fight for liberty and for human individuality and trying to keep human society and culture how it's meant to be, essentially. They're the ones who are trying to stop the
Illuminati. This game sounds like some libertarian propaganda to me is what this sounds like.
Well, they're not really. That's why it was weird to say, like,
cool gun-toting insurrectionists versus globalists. That's what you're pitching me right now.
If there was a country that was full of libertarians, the assassins would indeed try to stop the Templars from changing them. If there was a country full of communists, the assassins would also protect the like they're there to kind of let humanity work itself out. Like they're there to like let culture and be who they are as opposed to inflict their own will, whereas the Templars are trying to pull the strings.
So now I did play some of Assassin's Creed Odyssey and it seems like there's aliens involved now. Okay. Tell me about the aliens.
Yeah, so this is the next level that I must say does take this to kind of like, because this is why there are some people who think Assassin's Creed shouldn't have the future stuff and shouldn't have this bonkers stuff. But that's where I disagree, because without it, it wouldn't be the Assassin's Creed I love. So there is, in some form, there are these creatures or aliens. They're just humans before us called the Isu. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it. It's I-S-U. Mm-hmm. They're essentially like Adam and Eve. They ruled Earth for 77,000 years. And then
they went to Indiana State University.
Yes, and they're largely wiped out in some sort of war or something, which I never really understood or got to. But I don't really know how they're used other than just like they were the humans before the humans.
Well, because then they are like our deities are these aliens. Because in fucking Assassin's Creed Odyssey, it's like Zeus is real, but he's one of these Isu or whatever.
Yes,
right?
And the reason I love is because Assassin's Creed Odyssey is like, okay, cool. You're essentially playing a Spartan. If you're cool, you're playing. What's her name?
Cassandra.
You're playing her. But then if you get far enough, you're like, oh, by the way, you're the daughter of Pythagoras, and Pythagoras was given a scepter by the Isu to be immortal, to stop people from finding Atlantis.
To figure out triangles really good.
To stop people from finding Atlantis. Well, that's the only reason he was so smart, stop people from finding Atlantis. And then Cassandra lives for eternity. So you start getting into like Marvel Crisis Protocol multiverse stuff, which is dope.
If he was so smart, then I wouldn't have learned about his stuff in fourth grade, Matt.
So they are kind of like a level of deity. They are essentially the explanation for early humans.
All right, now tell me about the people who have DNA that go into a machine to relive their past memories.
So now the format and the science fiction aspect of Assassin's Creed, why Assassin's Creed's a science fiction franchise and not a history franchise, is because it's about the War of Templars and Assassins are still ongoing today. And part of that is, so you got this cool sort of like they're looking for various pieces of the Isu because the Isu have great power, right? It's Hellboy, it's Nazis looking for, you know, supernatural shit. It's the same sort of thing. Like the Templars are looking for ancient pieces of Eden and various things from the mythological past of humanity. And one way they investigate and try to find where those pieces are is to go back and analyze the history of the battles between the Templar and the Assassins. And the way they do that is through this machine, which now I forget the name of the machine.
The Animus.
I've never played a single one of those games.
I'm just trying to keep my nose from bleeding as I'm trying to remember everything that's happened in Assassin's Creed while explaining it. So yes, you can go into this contraption called the Animus if you have the DNA of the person you're looking for, and you can essentially relive their memories. In the first game, it was kind of like a clever way to essentially justify things like infinite lives and replaying missions and stuff. Because
when you die, they're like, oh, your memories are out of sync. He didn't actually fucking fall off that cliff while chasing a collectible around ancient Rome or whatever. Yeah.
And I think as time's gone on, they've shifted it where like the technology's gone better, so you no longer have to get in this huge machine. And I think it doesn't even matter if you share the DNA anymore. Like, you can inject the DNA of, like, if I wanted to go and look at like Hannibal, like they could inject Hannibal DNA into me. I don't have to be a relative of Hannibal anymore and stuff. They've made it
a little bit more realistic.
Yeah. I think they're trying to avoid this kind of like
weird
family lineage
shit,
thing. Yeah. Kind of like let anybody go back in the past. So yeah, that's essentially what it is. And every game takes place in a different, you know, usually like pinnacle point in history. You know, they've done the Renaissance, they've done, you know, ancient Egypt.
Yes, usually it's like some person from our world has to, you know, like, again, the original games are about a schlubby bartender who gets kidnapped by the Templars and they're sending him back into the past. And it was set in like ancient, I think it was like, where was it, in the Middle East, the first one?
Yeah, the first one's in the, I'm trying to remember exactly but it's old.
So yes, it's always like you're going into your past and that's how you wind up in all these different periods of history. As far as like an arch mythology to basically stuff all of human history into like one big zany conspiracy theory, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
So why were my ancestors mostly like climbing things and getting collectibles?
Because they're assassins, bro.
That sounds like a pretty boring life, I gotta say.
Okay, so let's get into it. And yes, I think the real secret is, the real fun of this is going to be, what time in history do we want to set this? Because that's where, like, ultimately the story...
Modern times, the 20th century, and it starts at a Renaissance fair, so you're like, oh, this must be set in medieval Europe, and then a guy walks out of the turkey leg, like, I don't know if that's accurate, but sure, I guess so. And then as it goes on, everyone's like, forsooth, sir, come into my wares. They're like, they're selling dildos and bongs in this tent. What the fuck? And then you realize that your cell phone rings, and it's like, hey, you're late.
Freddie, that is a perfect intro. Freddy,
like, hear me out, guys. I know we came in to do Assassin's Creed, but hear me out. Assassin's weed.
Yo,
and you have to get
strain,
so high that you go back in time.
This strain lets you live out your past lives, dude. That's how dank it is, dude. Oh my gosh, it's the Kush Templars.
It's not so far-fetched. The word assassin comes from hashish. That's the connection.
Yeah, so there's the Templars who are like, the man, and then there's people trying to free your mind with the herb. This is the dumbest. You know what? Just because you said
I think
it, well,
I put this
I'll
way.
Be
whatever a- we break, whatever we break, you can essentially control F, find replace Animus with weed, and then essentially replace every line of dialogue with weed jokes, and we can make assassins weed.
The role of guy doing weed jokes the whole podcast this evening will be played by Freddie Wong.
Okay. The other reason I thought about finally doing this, because I've definitely asked to do this for a long time.
Yeah, this has been an ongoing refrain.
Because I love Assassin's Creed. It's like, come on, cowards, let's do Assassin's Creed, so let's do it. But Freddie has been reading a lot of Roman history. I don't know if we necessarily want to do Rome, but I was like, okay, at least there's like Freddie's also getting all into history right now.
I gotta say, I still like my Renaissance fair opening. That's just a total...
No, that's a great opening, like, regardless, like, right?
I like that opening a lot, because I definitely want the main character to be a dweeb, for sure.
Yes, and I like psyching out the audience and kind of inherently making fun of, like, this is gonna take us back in past, and we're gonna go into the past, so like, starting with a fake...
The Renaissance Festival. I feel like the person is going to the Renaissance Festival. They must have done this joke in Assassin's Creed at some point. But I feel like we should definitely do that 23andMe as a Templar plot to find people with DNA of the fucking that goes to Genghis Khan and shit like that.
That is so good. It shouldn't be he's like some like bloodline. It should be like his friend or somebody he cares about is kidnapped at the Renaissance Fair. Because they're 23andMe and they're taken because, yes, the Templars are using them for their bloodline or whatever.
Or it's someone who works at 23andMe and that's how they get into it, right? Like, that could be an angle.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes, he could be a dork that works at 23andMe. He's like a data scientist. That's my brother. Sorry, Jeff. He's like a dork who works at 23andMe and is like a data scientist or whatever, and is not very high up. And then, yes, he is...
He's very high up, though.
That's actually really good, because you could do a thing where they're testing and they're like, okay, they then ask for like a blood test from all their employees, you know, because they're like, might as well test this first by getting it here or something like that. Anyways, I like the idea that this guy works there. And then, yes, the company he's working for is run by Templars.
Okay, so we've got 23andMe. We've got someone going back in time. Now, here's something funny, because they've done an Assassin's Creed movie and with Michael Fassbender that everyone forgot about. And I think actually was, in point of fact, the original Assassin's Creed movie was one of the inspirations for Storybreak.
Yep.
Because
I was annoyed.
We were talking about Assassin's Creed and video game movies in the Rocket Jump office. And my wife Cherish was like, well, what would you guys do for a video game movie? We started talking about Blast Corps, and she was like, can we record this for Rocket Jump Film School? And then we did the first Storybreak. So, like, we're really full circle at this point.
Yeah, I was ranting at Assassin's Creed with Michael Fassbender should have been, and had a bunch of, like, talent behind the camera. I'm like, should have been a slam dunk, easy to make, here's a good-ass movie. Like, how bad could they mess it up? And what they chose to do, I said none of us have seen it. I did watch the first like 15 minutes like a while ago. So, you know, I can't really speak well to it. Maybe I'll finally watch it. But everything I heard is that's just boring. It's just like very faux serious and no charm. And I will say that one of the good things about Assassin's Creed is after the first game, they're smart in that their characters are usually relatively charming, and the games actually do have quite a bit of wit to them.
Yeah, no, they're goofy games for sure.
Yeah, they're totally more like Prince of Persia than freaking Game of Thrones. Like,
this is all you need to know about the movie, is that our opening act was a dweeb who works for 23andMe gets kidnapped to the Renaissance Festival. This is the first sentence of the plot for Assassin's Creed film. In 2016, Cal is sentenced to death for murdering a pimp.
Nice. That's what I want.
All right.
Okay,
right,
we won't shit on the movie because we haven't seen
it. Okay,
but
okay,
yeah, so it's not successful.
So, but I was going to say, is there a world where, like, the movie, like, we do, like, he winds up, or our main character, and again, we don't need to assume that it's a dude, they wind up jumping around to, like, a couple different periods, like, in history? Like, that's almost like our fun, it's like a globetrotting thing in that sense, where it's like, we do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I don't know. Like, almost like Bill and Ted meets Assassin's Creed. Hear me out. Two kids who are going to flunk out of history class, their dad works at Aspergo or whatever, the company, and they steal the Animus to ace their fucking history test. Sorry, anyway. Coming up with banger movie ideas, and we can get back to this podcast.
There just won't be Assassin's Creed.
All right, I know.
Okay, hold on. Let me ask you this. Let me ask the Will question. What is the quintessential element, essence of Assassin's Creed as the player of this game?
The hard part, and the first reason I was not excited for the new movie, and I'm answering your question, which is the first time I knew I wasn't going to like the movie, as they said, it was 60% in our time. And I was like, okay, like, the story of the person in the Animus is not the story of Assassin's Creed. Like, that is like the fun kind of like Marvel outside, putting it all into perspective and like giving this goofy comic book energy. But like, when people talk about what their favorite Assassin's Creed, or when they say they like, you know, Brotherhood, they're talking about Ezio. Like, they're talking about the character in, you're playing a good game about Ezio, the character in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. You're not like Damon, who's the
Desmond.
Yes, thank you, Damon. Desmond. Freddie, you know more than me.
I literally have never played this game, and I seem to know more about than you do.
It's
Matt.
It's like the Great Gatsby. It's like Nick is your in, right? But the movie's about Gatsby.
Yes, exactly.
So, like, that's fun. I like having this dweeb, and I like having that. Because, like, what's nice about it and why it could work for a movie is that what's really good about it for the first like five Assassin's Creed games is like Desmond is your connection to make it feel like a series and not just a bunch of random arbitrary games. Like, that way you can essentially go to a different time zone. So, like, if you do a sequel, like, you would keep your dork that you set up in the first game that had a little bit of like a B plot essentially, and he's your glue for the rest of it. But now, you know, the second one, you can go to Samurai or whatever you're going to do.
This is actually an important point in terms of the game, is that it's not like the game is you, like, okay, so in traditional Assassin's Creed world, it's not like our doofus character gets jacked into this machine and then he wakes up in the body of his badass ancestor.
Nope.
It's just this person is recalling and remembering, and then it cuts to, like, the story is about this other person in the past living their life doing whatever it is they were doing.
Yes.
So that is actually a good point that I kind of forgot, because it's not like this is going to be a power fantasy zero to hero movie where it's like, guess what, you're going to go back in time and be a badass. Like, that's not how these games work.
Yeah, and to clarify for those that didn't play, or like, the basic idea of Desmond in the first game is your storyline with him is like he's imprisoned and is strapped into the Animus. Whenever you come back to the modern times, you're kind of like learning about the company that's doing this and you're trying to escape. So you're kind of cutting back and forth between those two kind of completely different stories. And then the way they're connected is you realize like the people who have trapped you are Templars just today. So again, I actually think for the first movie, you would do something like that, where you're essentially going to use modern times to present the idea of this everlasting war between Templars and Assassins. Like, is like a pretty straightforward, like, cool, like, that's what this war is going on today.
I don't think we should spend too much time on this person because they are not your main character. They are your framing device. Your main character is the person that passed. So I was going to say, just for the sake of brevity, because it feels like a cool period to do, let's go with ancient Rome.
Yes.
Because Freddie's been listening to his Roman history podcast, so he can probably fill us in.
And books.
Yes, Freddie's been reading books. He got me into it. I'm only halfway through History of Rome, and I just started Augustus. So unless he does that time period, I will only have some vague knowledge on it. But I think, Freddie, you should pick what's the coolest time period and coolest character from Roman history.
Intuitively, and then I yield the floor to Freddie. I was going to say, like, Julius Caesar seems like the easiest thing to revolve this around, and the Rubicon and all that stuff. But go ahead.
I would back it up just a little bit. You know, if you back up to the Gracchi brothers, which is kind of the beginning of this, like, schism. Well, I mean, this has always kind of been there. But the schism of, like, the populists versus the, you know, sort of ruling class, right? The sort of populist appeal. Julius Caesar doesn't exist without, you know, sort of the Gracchi brothers and these politicians who essentially started off the whole thing of being like, hey, what about like the people, you know? And that sort of conflict of...
That's early, right? That's like before
That's like 150, 140. So Julius Caesar is iced. He gets got in 44 BC, so it's about 100 years prior to Caesar. So it's that sort of century lead up is a possibility. It just feels like Caesar is obvious. It would be cool to be like, ooh, Sulla, during the time of like the proscriptions, during this time when he was like, yo, we're posting up lists of people who can be killed and you can get money for their heads.
Interesting.
So Frey, you tell me, because I don't know anything about Sulla other than a little bit, so you'll guide us through that. The only other option I can present is, what do you think, is there anything to do during this Hannibal?
So the Hannibal period, when I think about in the context of this game, is a very clear outward threat and an outward war existential threat. It's not like internal conflict with a bunch of assassinations, which seems to like, here's one of the reasons why I'm like kind of drawn to like the Gracchi brothers or during the proscriptions period under Sulla, which is basically like, in a nutshell, Sulla was like, yo, I had enemies. I'm back in power now. So here's a big list of my enemies. If you kill them, well, you get all their property, which, you know, if it kind of gives you a pretty good incentive to hunt down these people and kill them because you could become rich like instantaneously. So right away, there's like a bunch of assassinations and shit going on right there, right? It's this list of people.
Also, the Gracchi brothers were, according to Wikipedia, assassinated by their rivals in the Senate.
The Gracchi brothers represent this list of like populist rulers who get assassinated, and it just happens over and over again for about 100 years before Caesar finally puts all the sort of pieces together and like manages to survive long enough before being himself assassinated again.
Okay, so the fun thing I would do, because just to kind of point to kind of maybe a way to work backwards, is just thinking about how these games work, is like, you definitely want to center it around like one big like historical event. Like, again, if you're going to do like the Punic Wars, it'd be like the Battle of Cannae or something. So like, I don't know what it would be for Sulla. And then I would, just looking really quickly at Sulla, the idea that he died of cirrhosis of the liver, like, no. He died from an assassin. Like, that's the funny. It's like the alt history is like, oh, of course that's what history says. But like, no, like Sulla had to die, like ultimately for world history to be the way that it is. So like, what would that kind of work like?
Well, so let's start from the end here, which is kind of interesting about Sulla, which is he became dictator, and much like the lauded, you know, sort of move that George Washington did and sort of Cincinnatus and all this stuff, he resigned his dictatorship. He was like, I did it. I fucking rule. I fixed it all. I'm good. I'm resigning. And then basically partied for the rest of his life. Like, quote from the Wikipedia after his retirement, quote, he consorted with actresses, harpists, those fucking harpists, and theatrical people, drinking with them on couches all day long. So he basically just was like, I'm done, I'm good. But the point is like, he was a dictator. He had this whole reign of terror for a while, but he felt like he fixed everything and he stepped down. There is something interesting about the idea of, like, when we think about assassinations and political assassinations, it's always somebody at the height of their power, and like, it alters the course of history. And if you kind of go with his thing, it's kind of this interesting idea of like, yeah, he dies, But also, the course of history isn't happened in his lifetime either, right? It's not like these sort of singular figures that result in these big turns of events, like as the Assassin's Creed game seemed to kind of like focus on. It's more like, no, he kind of is just a part of this big movement that then, you know, leads all the way out to Caesar.
Using you as the history buff, I'm going to go into the structure of the game here. So what I like about that, here's what I would say, because, well, you've played Assassin's Creed Brother. You played the one with Leonardo da Vinci, right?
Yes.
I think Sola is your Leonardo da Vinci. The idea of this
who is this person?
Sola is a guy who used to be like a powerful dictator. Okay. And what you would do is you would do it when he's just retired in his villa way away from Rome, chilling with actresses and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is this guy who's like, he set out just to write his memoirs. He's like a Julius Caesar before Julius Caesar.
Okay.
But he retired and stayed away and just enjoyed his life until he died. So the idea that is like, well, no, he wasn't just writing his memoirs. He was doing soft power shit and still trying to make sure that Rome was protected. And like him being this kind of like old mentor dude, you're kind of like Q in a villa, like this kind of like, right, like party animal guy, is this guy who's like kind of responsible for whoever our character is going to be, whoever our assassin is. He's like your Leonardo da Vinci type character.
Yeah, that is an option. So one thing that is a little bit weird about this time period that might be difficult is that a lot of these figures, right, these big political figures, they're not like all hanging out in the city of Rome, right? It's not like you have the Vatican and it's like, here's the Pope and here's the main big bad. A lot of these guys are like out on the outskirts of the Roman Empire fighting wars and, you know, plundering and getting all this, you know, loot and all that stuff. So they kind of come in and out. So just spatially, I don't know the games. Can you move around at all? Or is it spatially just kind of like in one spot?
Yeah, and it's a movie. And it's obviously going to be a little bit like you're going to add new characters. And it's going to be, especially what's nice about going this far back is like history is pretty solid, but like it's definitely conflated. Like don't think about it too specifically. Like again, like if I were to just say like Hannibal, I'd be like, you're building up to the Battle of Cannae on purpose. Like, and you're going to essentially build to, it was designed that the Romans all died there. Like that needed to happen. So that's like where the game is going to build up to. So like, again, similarly, like what is, you know, again, maybe it is the assassination of Julius Caesar to Will's point, because at least they would know what we're talking about. we just need something like that. We need like a cool.
All right. Yes. There's a lot of Roman history that can be covered here. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to figure out exactly when to set this thing. And when we come back, we'll have a little more of a thrust of a gladius, if you will, to the heart of the story.
Nice one.
Gladius wasn't technically around until 20 AD, I believe. For
we'll be right back.
Hey, folks, week 2 of Max Fun Drive. You know, we hog the airways all the time. How about we take it to the phone lines and listen to what one of you Max Fun supporters have to say about this fine network.
This is Delaney from Pittsfield, New Hampshire. I am a Max Fun member because the podcasts and shows here have made it easy to smile when smiles felt impossible, and also sometimes easy to sleep when sleep felt impossible. Thank you, everybody.
I would say Story Break is definitely one of those podcasts that help people sleep. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe when they're going on too long about Roman history a little bit. Time for this host to take a napperino.
As long as you don't do both things, because there's nothing creepier than watching somebody fall asleep as they're smiling. It's very weird. Have you ever seen that?
No, that's I don't strange. Watch people when I. Are you saying it's creepy that people smile when they sleep, or that when you watch them? Like, are you? What are you saying?
I don't watch people. What are you talking?
Matt
anyways.
Doesn't watch people when he falls asleep. But we've been watching you all show your love of this network. We are over 10,000 new and upgrading members already here in week 2. And all of you folks who are doing that, who are helping us out on this network, who are showing your support, allow us to do what we do, particularly during this time of social distancing podcasts. One of the few things that don't require us to be in the same room with each other. We're able to do our thing because of folks like you. Just being able to have something you can go back to on a week-to-week basis, right? To be able to hear familiar voices, to make you laugh, think, interact, feel normal maybe, is extremely important to folks. And if this sounds like you and you're able to join, I would encourage you to join the Max Fun Network.
And it's very easy to do it. Membership at Max Fun starts at $5 a month, and that gets you all the bonus content. Guys, there's so much bonus content.
Years and years of bonus content.
This year, I was like, I'm not doing anything. I'm not reading a single book. I'm not watching a single... I still haven't even seen the last Star Wars movie until I get through all the bonus content from Max Fun. Still haven't done it.
If you join at $10 a month, you'll get the Max Fun membership card, one of the cool show pins of your choice, and you'll also get that bonus content. And at $20 a month or more, you get the special gift this year, the Max Fun Game Pack, a custom dice set, D6s, in case you're wondering, and a custom deck of playing cards. Now, for you playing card nerds out there, let me just say that this is a 52-card deck, two Joker cards, and then a little thank you card on it to hit the 55 for the sheet that they cut them from. Good decks, clean pharaohs. If you're worried about being able to pharaoh shuffle, you'll be able to with these. Get your cardistry career going with the Max Fun playing cards. I got a little close-up look at these. They got little like show references and stuff on the face cards. It's very cool.
You can get a look at that deck on our Twitter page by watching Freddie do some mind-blowing close-up magic with them. You can check that out at twitter.com/RJStoryBreak. You can learn all about the Max Fun Drive at MaximumFun.org/join, and you can learn about becoming a member. And also, if you feel like you want to support a little bit extra, but you aren't able to fully upgrade right now, you can check out boosting your membership. This is a really cool thing they're doing this year where you can upgrade your membership like just a little bit between levels. It doesn't qualify for extra gifts, but it does still directly support the show.
Think of it like NOS. Like NOS in the Fast and the Furious movies.
It's like a little bit of podcast NOS to boost your membership.
Yeah.
I live my life one quarter podcast at a time, and, you know, that's why you need the boost sometimes. Look, all joking aside, like, we want to thank everyone right now who's a member. We want to thank everyone in the world right now who's in healthcare and retail, who's doing essential jobs right now. We're thinking about you guys so much, and we are so grateful for all the work that you do.
I'd like to personally thank all of my Postmates drivers.
Oh, my God. I would not be alive right now.
The world running.
Honestly, like, and we've gotten messages like this, and it means a ton to us when we hear from people saying that, like, you know, our show is something that gets them through their workday, especially given, you know, how hard, you know, essential workers are working right now. We really hope that Story Break puts a smile on your face right now, and that we are hoping that we can support the work you're doing in return for the support you guys are giving us. So, yeah, I mean, it's such a crazy time right now. Like, I don't honestly, like, doing Story Break has meant a lot to me as a podcast host. It is like one of the few ways I get to hang out with my boys. I miss you guys.
Yeah.
It is like a highlight of my week, and we hope that it's a highlight of your week as well.
So head on over to MaximumFun.org/join. Have a look at those gifts. Consider, please, becoming a member, supporting the network. Thanks for listening, everyone. Let's get back to our Roman history podcast now. I guess it's a Roman history podcast. Here we go.
Okay, guys, during the break, Matt and Freddie went over to the library and read every book on Roman history, and I believe the two of you have picked an era for our Assassin's Creed movie, so allow me to play the part of the unknowing audience member and lay it on me. What do you guys got?
So we are going to set this one during the Second Punic War. Not the first Punic War. Not the Third Punic War. Number two, the Empire Strikes Back of Punic Wars.
Let's just hope it's not the Last Jedi of the Punic Wars. Am I right? Just kidding.
You know what? The Punic Wars kind of do work like the Star Wars movie.
Oh, they absolutely
like, you got the first one. The first one's pretty rad. Like, it's good stuff and kind of sets up like the whole thing. And the second one's the best one. It's the darkest, and it's like you think the good guys, depending on who you're looking at, are going to win or lose. And then it kind of ends on a cliffhanger, but you kind of more or less got what you wanted. And then the third one's like, you know, it's kind of just like, yeah, you got to make the money. He's got to complete it. He's got to finish up the franchise make and the get money out of here.
The third one was the one with the Ewoks.
He's got to finish up Carthage.
Tell me about the Punic Wars. Tell me about this Second Punic War. What does it mean? Where are we? What's the deal? Just lay it on me.
Okay, so the Second Punic War, in a nutshell, you have Rome taking over Italy, this boot in the middle of this pond we call the Mediterranean Sea. But you know what? They're not the only people kicking around there, even though they're a boot. Get it? Kicking. They come into conflict with Carthage. Carthage is another empire, ancient empire during this time.
This age of empires.
This age of empires, if you will, another Mediterranean state. They're coming into conflict with them. They're also coming into conflict with, like, Macedonia and Syracuse and, like, the Numidians and sort of Iberian sort of Spanish forces. So it's like all these sort of folks are fighting for control of the Mediterranean, the Western Mediterranean, more or less.
And pretty much everybody decides to join Carthage to take on Rome.
All right. So we've got Rome versus Carthage for control of the Mediterranean. And there's like a bunch of other factions that have aligned with Carthage against Rome.
Just for really simplicity, it's like you got Italy. And Italy is a boot that's pointing towards Africa. Mm-hmm. And then you got Sicily, which is like the soccer ball that's
that
like in between the
Africa.
Boot that's kicking towards Africa. And it's like, okay, we get it. You guys are on the boot. But once they started getting to that soccer ball, Carthage is like, okay, you guys are getting a little close to,
a little too close to comfort.
We want the soccer ball. So there's a battle over the soccer ball. And Carthage is like, you know what? We're just going to take the
whole
boot.
Holy shit, Matt. This is such a good way of summing it up. And then what's also notable for this period is this is the first time that Rome really faces a battlefield commander who starts to kick their ass.
And who is that?
Yes.
And that would be the great Hannibal. And also Hannibal, by the way, interesting little story. Supposedly, his dad got his butt kicked in the first Punic War.
Yep.
And his dad was like, yo, son, you're going to swear vengeance on Rome, right? And Hannibal was like, yes, dad, I will destroy Rome. I will put my entire life towards destroying this empire. So it's already some epic personal stakes.
It's really fascinating because Hannibal's definitely like, there's moments where it's like strategically, he's like, hey, you guys could just take Sicily. He's like, no, I'm going to destroy Rome because it killed my father. And my father told me the only reason I'm still alive is to destroy Rome for
gotcha.
Him.
Gotcha. So, motivating goal. Dope shit. And Hannibal's the elephants in the Alps, right? Is that
elephants
Hannibal?
In the Alps. Correct.
What a fucking icon.
Yep. One of the greatest. The Second Punic Wars has two of the most famous moments in all of military history.
So that was like, you're ready because that's like the AT-ATs. It really is the Empire's Strike.
Yeah. They literally, the Romans work and figure out how to take down elephants with
harpoons
chariots
and tow cables.
Literally chariots with rope.
Oh my God, fuck off. Are you serious?
100%. That's how, because war elephants were so devastated when they first met them. And then they realized that the way to take them out is to trip them.
All right, well, that scene's going to be in our movie for sure. Yeah.
So here's the big question, which is actually, we get a fun choice, which is, are we on the
side
of the Romans
or of Hannibal?
Or of the Carthaginians?
Interesting stuff.
You make this really interesting the moment you said it on the side of the Carthaginians.
Yeah, because it is like a little bit of like, there's no way to stop Rome. Because what would be fun in terms of a bittersweet ending, which is often what these games do, which is like, right, because they can't literally change the broad strokes of history. But what it could be is that the Illuminati and the Templars or whatever, their goal was to have Rome control the entire world. And while Carthage didn't stop them, it was enough to slow down, like the idea that to prove that they were no longer invincible, because Hannibal essentially put the fear of God in the Romans. It is the sticking point. Like, do they do enough that like it does stop Rome from lasting 3,000 years instead of 1,000 years or whatever?
You know what's cool is you can have Hannibal, but you can also have like, because the Numidians, which is sort of northern Africa, that sort of region, basically supplied the cavalry, and they were the best cavalry in the world, basically. Well, as far as we can tell, in the Western world at this point.
Oh.
So you have like
just freaking stable
cool
boy.
Ooh,
just like a stable boy. Yeah,
who's
just on the road.
Are you telling me we have the opportunity to make an epic action movie about a horse girl? Is that what you're saying right now?
Oh my God, yes, you could, and it'd be an African horse girl.
Okay,
like. This is different.
Horse Girl, the Assassin's Creed game. All right, I'm intrigued.
Oh, she definitely goes on the march over the Alps.
Yes, absolutely. But I will just throw this out here. So this horse person would be in...
Freddy. We said it's Horse Girl.
Yes, that's right. This horse girl would be in, like, you could say modern day Tunisia, which is, incidentally, where they shot Tatooine.
Oh my God.
Perfect. I'm not kidding.
Fucking synergy, baby.
Synergy. Okay. That's very good. I love the idea of just like a person who's put, because again, an army might be 5,000 people and then have 10,000 of logistics and farmers.
She's a horse girl. She has a magical bond with her horse. And then it's like War Horse, and Hannibal's army is like,
what if you got in the Animus, but your DNA was horse DNA and you were the horse, dude?
So no, you're a horse assassin. War Horse.
Assassin's Creed War Horse.
I'm just saying.
Spinoff.
I'm just saying.
The spinoff everybody was looking for.
Oh, okay. I got a thing. Okay, her dad fought alongside Hannibal's dad in the fucking first Punic War, right? Something like that. And then I don't know where the assassins come in. We got to figure out how she winds. Okay, all right, you
got
to think.
I got the core. I got the core. You're starting, right? Think of it like a video game. You got to have your cool cinematic Call of Duty, because everybody's got to do a Call of Duty starting where you, like, you know, this is walking simulator with a bunch of effects and shit. You are the horse girl on the march through the Alps when Hannibal gets into Italy.
Okay.
Right? I think she gets separated from the army, and now she's in your open world game of Italy.
Oh, there's, like, all kinds of collectibles. And
she gets taken in as an assassin. By again, you would have a Roman who sees the future and knows that Rome can't get so big. Now she's moving through Italy through this Second Punic War, coming in and out of battles with Hannibal, you know, finding herself, you know, being invited to a Roman party because she's, you know, hit it off with like some, like, right? She's moving through the Punic War and rising up the ranks of Roman society as somebody who came from Carthage.
Oh,
or
and this is taking place during the Fabian, like, so basically, one of the things that is a little bit of the like, how history goes and not like it's not a movie is Hannibal makes it over. He fucking slays, destroys ass in Italy, just fucking rocks fucking fools' faces. There's a couple of battles where he just crushes Rome. Battle of Trebia, Battle of Lake Trasimene, both totally metal, totally insane. But he didn't march on Rome right away when he basically was in the most powerful position. He was like, I'm going to continue to try and get more allies to like crush Rome and like get more people to my side. Some of these other Roman allies, we're gonna lay waste the countryside and not march on Rome, which ends up being one of the great like what ifs in history. Is like, what if Hannibal had done it at the one time that Rome was like weak in this way? He didn't. So there's this long period where he's just kind of like skipping around the countryside and, you know, taking things out. And the Roman strategy, what became known as the Fabian strategy, because the consul was like, okay, we're not going to attack him directly. He's kicking our ass every time we try and attack him directly. We'll just shadow him and just kind of like starve him out. You know, like the idea is to almost like siege him within the country because we know that his support's waning and we'll send people over to Carthage to try and like fight the war back at home there. We're just going to kind of control him and kind of put some gates around him here, but let him do his thing. Very controversial strategy, ends up being the right strategy, but that's a long period of time where there's not like a confrontation. That's when this game can take place. That's when this movie can take place.
Yes. And by the way, I think we have our end point, which is Hannibal, when he finally left, he was betrayed by the Romans and he committed suicide by poisoning himself. No, right. The alt history would be Hannibal was essentially going to Napoleon it and go back.
All right, because you're losing me in the weeds a little bit here. So give me the arc of this war. So Hannibal, he sails up to Switzerland and crosses the Alps to attack Italy, right? That's essentially.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then, so what happens over the course of this war that you're going to be putting this main character in?
Frank, correct me if I'm going to do a really brief version since I think you
I do
know
like your
more,
soccer so ball analogy, so I think you're pretty good. Let's go.
Yeah,
here.
And I think the really brief version is Hannibal, as Freddie said, Hannibal whoops ass, but instead of just destroying Rome, he decides his main strategy is to get everybody in the Mediterranean to turn against Rome by proving they're weak. So instead of going into Rome, he just stays around the countryside, essentially circling around Rome, just constantly kicking ass for like a decade.
Oh,
like he's just constantly doing this. And then eventually, like, the Romans just win. like, literally, it's like eventually the Romans get enough power and they fucking take him out.
Okay.
The key is the Romans won by going back and attacking Carthage.
Yes.
Right? They had enough resources to send troops across the Mediterranean. They kicked the soccer ball, so to speak. They got the home city. The home city's like, yo, this is over. Hannibal, come back. So Hannibal loses because he hasn't come in direct.
So while he is marauding around in Rome, they actually attack his home.
Yes,
in
more
Italy,
or less.
Yes.
More
in
or
Italy,
less.
Right.
Yeah.
So as he's... okay, and then they attack, and then he surrenders, essentially.
And what's fun about that in terms of, like, being in Rome is this besieged city full of people who are constantly terrified that Hannibal could come any moment. And, like, cities are getting destroyed all around them, but they're never actually destroyed. So in terms of, like, also, like, a main character kind of intrigue, like, being inside Rome, you know, with, like, there's all this, like, power struggles going on, and people are freaking out and all this stuff. But yes, the arc of the war is essentially Hannibal surprises them, kicks their ass, keeps destroying Italy, hoping that they'll eventually destroy all of Rome. And Rome eventually gets it through their head to just essentially go through the back door, jump across the soccer ball and attack Carthage.
Okay, all right. So now we're okay, so I understand that. So now we got to figure out what the... Oh my God, this is the reason we didn't do Assassin's Creed, because you have to break 10 things within two separate dense mythologies, and then you have to fucking come up with a hero's journey in the middle of all of it. So
love it.
We're an hour in, so here we go. Yeah. So we have this girl who starts as a... Was it the Numidians? That's what you were saying? Numidian, where the cavalry...
Yeah.
So
cavalry,
she
yeah.
starts out as like a badass cavalry woman in Hannibal's army, right? Yes. That's what we're saying. Like, we open on them marching through the Alps, essentially, is what you're saying, right? Yes. Or like, so then that seems like this is a classic, because then if she gets captured, like maybe she's like an advanced scout to go size up Rome, and she's all stoked because she's like, great, we're going to attack Rome. We're going to wrap this war up lickety split. And then I'm going to get back home to my family, let's say, like gladiator style or something like that, right? But then Hannibal makes this pivotal decision to, and maybe they even get ambushed and captured, and she's like, Hannibal's going to come and rescue us because he's going to fucking kick Rome's ass. And instead, Hannibal goes off to go rampage around, because Hannibal, and maybe this is where you can dig your theme out, to kind of tie it back to this thing with Hannibal's dad, right? That Hannibal's dad wanted him to swear vengeance or whatever. So that you would do like that. Hannibal is more driven by his emotional need to make Rome suffer and to humiliate them than he is to like have a quick decisive victory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you have this Numidian horse girl who's stuck in Roman jail. She's a prisoner of war, and then she meets like a member of the assassins who helps her break out. And now she's working with this retired senator or whatever, who's trying to put an end to the war, period, for good, right? Like, he wants peace. He wants to, you know, like, or something like that. And then she's going to become an assassin and try to use her blade to, like, put a stop to, because she's seen the, I don't know, something like that. Are we getting there?
Yeah, and I think what could be interesting, this is tough because I kind of want to get into the idea, but, like, what would be intriguing to me in terms of her last assassination, like, if you did this kind of alt history where it's like, what if Hannibal, like, didn't turn around? What if Hannibal went back into Rome? Like, is the idea that the assassins, or maybe you reveal, because they've done this in some Assassin's Creed games, where like you reveal that you're not really an assassin, you've been a Templar the whole time, like they were tricking you because they're very similar organizations.
Oh, that's a good twist for the first one. Yeah.
Wait, so the games will be like, psych, you were actually one of the bad guys the whole time?
It's not common. They've just done it before because they both have similar, they're both secret assassins, essentially.
That's like a branding issue. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're an assassin organization, you got to get your branding right, because nobody's ever like, yo, turns out you're working for Pepsi. It's like, no, you would know. That's a branding issue. PR. Anyway.
What I could see, that kind of depends on what you want to do with it. Maybe it is just assassins. But like, again, the final thing, her being like somebody who worked with Hannibal, like the idea of killing Hannibal as her final assassination, like a cost, right? It's a real personal thing. Like, she knows this person. But if it's for the greater good, if the argument essentially is like, this is the way both sides took it, and if Hannibal continues the war, like, Carthage unstopped is just as dangerous as Rome unstopped. Like, this is the balance that needs to happen. Like, Hannibal can't turn around and continue this war. Like, you need to take out Hannibal, and that being the final, again, the alt history sort of thing, like, rather than like committing suicide, like, he was gonna Napoleon it and turn around.
When did he die? Because he surrendered and everything before he died, right? Like, yeah,
the Battle of Zama is a battle that Hannibal fought in Africa. He pulled back, and there was one more battle that he lost.
Yeah.
Okay.
And rather than being surrendered, then he killed himself.
Okay, so you have this girl, you have... I'm just trying to, like, what is the arc for our main character in this? Again, like, when you describe that Ezio is, like, this sort of, like, dilettante playboy.
So where you would go is you would be someone who has this burning hatred of Rome, which is why, right, they've joined the march on the Alps. And then over time, the realization is maybe that the greater good here is in defeating Hannibal, maybe? I don't know. It seems very...
But stuff, I kind of rather it be like Rome than doing the Africa country.
Yeah, I feel a little weird about making that. Then she learns that Rome was the good guys.
No, it just seems
Here's what I could see. Maybe this is the galaxy brain play. Like, is there like a world where the thing she winds up realizing is that, like, you have to fight on, like, this... like the side of the people or whatever. Like, you mentioned, how much further is this along from the Gracchi's, the Gracchus brothers?
Earlier, way earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, because you can essentially split up the Roman sort of thing as to being like, once they ran out of like people attacking them and places to conquer, that's when internally they started to eat themselves up. like, this is the period where they're defending themselves, so they're pretty united, you know, as we understand it.
Okay, so you have the perspective of this person who's, again, like, the arc of someone being, like, this idealistic warrior who's fighting for the glory of their general, then seeing how the other side lives, and then coming to a deeper truth, and then, you know, using that knowledge to express agency to change the nature of the war. Like, I get that arc. Like, that makes sense to me. I don't know that it's necessarily that Rome is, like, the good guys, although, to be fair, they are getting invaded, but, like, there's obviously a deeper, like, I don't know, is there something where it's just like she realizes that this is all a fucking game to, like, the ruling class, whether it's, just, it's Hannibal,
yeah,
it's just or the
pawns,
people,
or,
and so then
or
she has to, like,
Templars,
make a move, yeah, for, like, the downtrodden people that are getting their asses kicked.
Okay, bear with me, here could be a thing, just like, rather than getting into all the politics of Rome versus Carthage, I feel like if she is some just classic hero's journey, somebody who doesn't want to leave home, I was just thinking, like, could it be that the ending is like the Second Punic War is over and, like, there's still work to be done in Rome, and it's like she is leaving because she's going to go back to Rome and, again, work as an assassin in Rome, you know, sort of thing.
The battle is lost, but the war is not over.
Yes,
and you're now
exactly like she's from timid person who, you know, takes over horses and, like, to show people that she's a warrior yet, you know, she's, like, training and all this stuff, and she's, like, you know, almost like Mulan-esque, like, she fucking kicks ass and she's on this journey, and then, you know, she goes through this whole cynical world of, you know, she's doing assassins and sometimes it feels like she's doing the right thing, then she doesn't understand, like, seems like the elites on both sides are evil and all this stuff, and, you know, rather than then at the end after Hannibal, you know, dies, like, maybe she's there to try to stop it even, and then it seems like it's all lost and, you know, the Second Punic War is over. It's like she's not resting and staying at home. She's going back and she finally puts on her assassin's garb, essentially, and it's like the battle's over, but, like, I got to keep doing.
Okay,
like,
so
right.
You would okay.
Yeah, because,
okay,
by the way, there is a little bit of right, like, Carthage eventually does fall, but in the end, right, Rome also sees the same fate, right? There's no such thing as they're not around here forever, right? Like,
okay, so her goal is to, oh my God, my head is going to explode. All right, so her goal is to,
you do fucking show-offy dude, wants to prove everybody he's the best, wants to be the next Hannibal if it, you know, again, wants his name in the freaking tomes of history, which
is
a common
main
thing.
Character?
Yes, your main character.
Glory.
He's just
so
a,
she's fighting
just
for
a stable,
glory. Yes.
Yes, just a stable boy or stable girl or horse girl. And that's what she starts as. And then I would do that, right, the ending of being a silent assassin with no glory and no identity, just doing what's right, is,
oh,
I can
see,
a journey, right?
I see. And she erases her name from history to, you know,
change.
Like,
history.
Literally the final moment would be she could stay in Carthage as a hero, as, like, the person who, like, you know, whatever, stopped.
Even though they lost.
Yeah, but, like, but they didn't get destroyed at the end of the Second Punic War. Carthage wasn't destroyed, right? Carthage was, they settled for peace. Third Punic War, Carthage goes away. But they're still heroes even when wars are lost. So it's like, rather than staying there and, like, taking glory and maybe being a new general, like, to fight another day, they, you know, put their head down, put the cloak on and go invisible and do what's right, sort of thing.
Okay, so here's what I would say is that, let's say she runs off to war. All right, and then maybe, because I think also maybe the derail is her getting, at least right away, like, getting captured and being in Rome and then fighting against Hannibal and stuff like that. So
If
you're going to do that story, someone who's going for glory, right? So the Carthage is going to war, right? And her father, you know, fought for Hannibal's father, and she's going to fight for Hannibal, right? Like, and she's like, this is fucking, runs away from home, steals her horse, right? It's her and the horse, and she goes to join the cavalry. Like, she's like, the Numidian cavalry is the best in the world. I'm gonna go fucking carve my name into history, right? All right, hell yeah. And now she's out there, right? But then you do that, it's like she is, like, you know, she's just a stable girl, right? So she doesn't know how to fight. She is, you know, a grunt in the army. It's not very glamorous. She still has this ambition, right? You'd be following her on Hannibal's whole crusade or whatever, but then you would do, she, like, while this is going on, she winds up thwarting an assassination attempt on Hannibal as he's doing this thing. Like, that's how she gets pulled into the intrigue, is that, like, the, you know, Hannibal has enemies coming out of the woodworks trying to kill him, right? And she becomes part of this, like, she sort of becomes a bodyguard, or, like, or even if it's just like she becomes aware of a threat, right? And so then her cavalry unit goes rogue to go fan out the threat, and then that's how she gets sucked into the intrigue with the assassins. Or maybe she thinks the assassins are the bad guys and she's working with the Templars or something like that. And so then you would do, like, that's how she gets pulled into it, with the goal of being to protect her general and so that she can be there with him when he marches on Rome, right?
Yeah.
And so then what I would do is, all of like the first half of her story is her becoming like, you know, she is. So it's, she is kind of this superhero thing, right? By day, she's just the stable girl, right? Like, she's not even allowed to ride into battle, right?
She's probably on the right. So armies would have these big, long groups of people who would just follow them.
Yeah. The supply train, right? Or whatever. Yeah, right. So she's not, so that would be like the horses. She went in trying to be like, great, I'm going to be a powerful warrior because my dad was. And they're like, great, we don't give a shit. You're going to be taking care of our horses while we do the fighting. She's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And then that's how she gets sucked into the thing with the assassins or whatever. Right. So she, meanwhile, starts rising the ranks of the assassins. She's becoming a real warrior. She, you know, saves Hannibal's life and earns her way into like his inner circle or something like that. And then what you would do is basically your midpoint is that moment where you think he is going to crush Rome. Like, and this is her moment. This is going to be them writing their names into the history books. But then he diverges instead because of this hatred in his heart. And maybe, again, it's part of the intrigue of what's really going on. We find out that Hannibal's motives are deeper and darker than she realized. And then, you know, maybe she gets betrayed or something like that.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a momentum there.
Yes, yeah.
Let me pitch this. It's something like that, just in terms of, to get to the assassin stuff earlier, just bear with me, because I think you're on the right track, which is you could do... Again, the classic, like, how she gets involved in this. It's like, she's a stable girl. She's made it past the pass. But again, she's not a soldier. She's not going to go to fight. She's never going to have this glory. She's hoping that after half the people died on the way marching through the Alps, like, maybe I'll be able to step up. But, like, no. Like, she's still just a stable girl.
Yeah, I can fill in some shoes. Yeah.
I would do that. What throws her on this adventure is she tries to get her moment of glory. She hops on a horse or whatever and tries to join a battle, but it goes disastrously wrong. Like, she, a classic, like, hero's journey, she, like, falls into a lake and you think she's drowned and she gets...
Like Trasimene.
Yes, and she's away from, like, she's now no longer with the army line. Like, she's separated from Hannibal, mm-hmm. and she's stuck in the Roman countryside. And again, mm-hmm. you can definitely, like, we all think of Rome as just, like, a bunch of white people, but, like, Sicily was Carthage and white people. Like, again, she could be a person that, like, not suspected, essentially. So you could do, she gets picked up, and, like, when she loses the train, like, somebody recognizes her as a Carthaginian. Like, I think she essentially gets brought in by the assassins to work in Rome and start assassinating and helping out the, like, resistance that's taking on people in Rome, essentially, is what
you
do. So,
but why does she think she's doing that? What is she think this is going to help Carthage? Is that what she's doing?
Yeah. They're going around killing people in Rome.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she's constantly wanting to go back. And, again, you could even have her team up with Archimedes in Sicily. like you just have the fun. Like, she's essentially now this assassin soldier. And she's like, this, you know, this is unhonorable. Like, assassinations aren't, like, what my thing. They're like, look, like, you're gone. Like, Hannibal's like, you're never going to make it to Hannibal's army. You'd have to cross through three countrysides of Rome at this point. Like, you know, do what, like,
he's going to be in Rome eventually. Like, yeah, we need to get Rome ready for when he rolls in.
And they're still fighting a war.
Yeah. Well, her first job is like, I'm literally traveling to Rome to do a horse race. You're coming with me and we're going to kill somebody like in Rome, like, you know, sort of thing. And then she gets involved in this. Then the low point would be, again, very Empire Strikes Back. Essentially, when actually, yes, literally, in the same way in Empire Strikes Back, where she's essentially doing the training to become an assassin, mm-hmm. and then she gets the information that her friends, Hannibal, just like Luke Skywalker realizes that his friends are in trouble, her friends, Hannibal, are all going to get attacked in Carthage, and she wants to run off to help because she's got this information, and he's like, you're not ready yet, like, don't, like, you can't control all of history, you need to stay here, and she runs off to try to help Hannibal in Carthage.
At the Battle of Zama.
Yes, and it goes wrong, and instead of, like, staying in Carthage, she's sucks up her pride and goes back to become a Jedi, to become an assassin, essentially, and continue the fight against the Romans.
Okay. I'm trying to follow that. Okay, so the one thing I was going to say that maybe, okay, I think I'm completely lost.
Think about, in terms of movie structure, your first act is you're introducing this girl and what she wants. She wants to be a great soldier. She mm-hmm. wants to be a hero like Hannibal's father was, like her father never got to be or whatever
yes.
it is. And whether I don't know enough about Carthaginians to know if women fight or whatever it is, however we want to play it,
just
not Assassin's concerned about
Creed
it because we don't
rules,
have time.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. She wants to be a warrior. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe she wasn't even supposed to go on the battle. Her, like, she's too young or whatever. And she slips away and she's going to take the army line because she knows if she gets a chance to fight, she'll be able to prove herself.
And there's a
That's
big
your first
fight
act.
At the Battle of Lake Trasimene where the yes. Carthaginians fucked up a bunch of Romans. They pushed them against the water, but during the fight she gets knocked into the water.
Yes, your second act and the sell the conceit is she goes to find glory and she instead gets humiliated or lost or falls off a cliff or drowns yes. in a lake and mm-hmm. is separated from the army.
Yes.
But because of whatever she did. Maybe she wakes up and sees somebody about, like, I don't know what it, but like she meets her Obi-Wan Kenobi. She meets this person who is also is wants to take down Rome, who's a member of Assassins, finds her, saves her life, and says, I have use for you. And she proves herself somehow, right? The classic, like, whatever. She proves that she's got some sort of skill. Like, I don't know if, like, you know, he's getting mugged. Like, an old man's getting mugged, and she takes them out quickly. And she's like, you're not from here. Like, you're a Carthaginian. No, I'm not.
Okay, can I pump the brakes just for a second? Because I have a thing that I think will help. Because the I also am trying to figure out the Assassin's angle of this, the Assassin Templar ship, which is like, I think, an icing we'll put on top. But this, let me give you a MacGuffin. So what are you going to do? She's the stable girl. She's, you know, getting her ass kicked, dragging along with the army. She's exhausted. She's, you know, wants a chance to prove herself. What if she sees someone flee from the war camp? Like, someone has stolen, like, Hannibal's war plans or something like that, like something really important let the Romans, like, fucking know what Hannibal's gonna do. Like, again, he has his map, like his war map, his path, right? And, like, you know, like, they're gonna be able to fucking destroy him if they have this thing. Maybe she sees this guy sneak out into the middle of the night and she chases after him, and that's how she's following his trail to Rome or something.
That's
like
so
that.
Good, because here's what you do: is she gets caught for running away and is banished. Like, they see her as just somebody who fled.
Oh,
right?
So they think she's a deserter. Yes.
And so then at the end, she has a chance to fix her name and be like, no, I was like, I was a hero. Like, I fought, I did all this stuff in Rome and I've come back and I helped Hannibal and I have proof that I, you know, was doing this for the right reasons. But no, because she can't. She has to pretend. She still has to be invisible and dead. And she goes back to Rome to keep doing her job as assassin without
tons of deserters through the ops.
Yeah, exactly. I love
this
that.
This is good too, because you could do that. Yes, she's a deserter. Like, then it's like, again, like, I don't know if they had gladiator fights at this point in Roman history, but you got to get her in, like, a fucking gladiator fight or something like that. So you do, like, she gets sold or she gets fucking, like, you know, they, okay, so, like, she gets caught, like, and then, like, obviously they're going to execute her for if she's a deserter, right?
Yes.
Like, that feels like that would be the next thing that would happen, right? So, and especially, it'd be great because you do the thing where it's like she sees this guy sneaking off with these war plans or whatever, she chases after him and then she gets caught, right? And then she's like, I saw this guy, he was doing this thing. He's like, what? They're like, what are you talking about? He's right here. And he's one of the guys that has sentences her to death, because now he knows that what she did, and then he's back in Hannibal's good graces, and now she's trying to track down the thing he sold to some spy or something like
that. And then you have a classic, then you, again, we won't get into specifics, but you have a classic kind of struggle between her and her mentor, the assassin mentor, which is he's giving her jobs that I think's necessary, but she still has this personal thing, which is like, that guy has a mole in Rome. And not only can I, like, it's in, like, she's like, it's important. Like, right, there's a mole in Rome. Like, he's a Carthaginian next to Hannibal, but he's helping the Romans. I need to figure this out. And he's like, you just want to clear your name. Like, I'm telling you, it's not the most important thing to figure out right now. But right, then you have the classic thing where she's got, like, right, she's at some dinner party in Rome and she can either go chase the mole or she can do the thing that her mentor told her is more important, which is like find this guy or whatever.
So her goal is to stop whatever this plot is. And then her emotional goal, also the stakes, is like she wants to redeem herself. She wants to prove that she's not a traitor or a deserter, like a coward, the worst possible thing she can think of. Right.
Yes.
So then she escapes death. You know, they maybe it's like they get ambushed by the Romans while they're going to attack her or whatever. She, by a quirk of fate, she manages to escape execution. And now she's on the run and she's going to go capture this spy in Rome. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then she gets to Rome and she gets caught almost immediately. She gets sprung loose by someone from the assassins. Right. And now she realizes that whatever this intrigue that was going on with this thing has a deeper thing going on. Right.
Yes.
Yep.
And then
what I love about the ending, what could be poignant, is, again, however you want to play exactly, but there's something about Hannibal, like the idealization of this like great warrior, like when he loses, like committing suicide and poisoning himself rather than going back there, like rather than romanticizing it, it's actually like she's like, what's the, like, who cares? Like, what's the point about my fucking name in history? Like, look, this guy's dead. Like, he just killed himself because of shame. Like, how about I continue? Like, who cares about my name? Like, I'm going to live and do what I need to do to help my people, right? Like, we're all just mortal. There's no such thing as like legacy.
The glory,
like,
is not
yeah, I'm gonna, yes, I, my name is dust, who cares? Like, my name can remain dust. Like, if that means that I could be invisible and I can go back to Rome and continue, you know, stopping, you know, this evil,
I more or less get the arc. Let's talk for a second about what is the actual Assassin Templar thing. Like, what is the actual intrigue?
I would assume, since they are in the middle of a war still, it's trying to destabilize this growing Roman hegemony over the region.
I mean, like, what is, like, this? It's always some bigger pulpy thing to do with the Isu or whatever, right? Like, some sort of weird alien artifact. They're like, that's the reason Hannibal didn't go to Rome, because he wasn't actually here to crush Rome. He was here to gain power by finding this artifact.
Okay, so bear with me. Can I throw this out? We don't have time to go through all the specifics of it, but Archimedes was supposedly making a death ray.
Oh my god.
Yes, that's right.
You didn't mention this until hour and a half into our record, man.
Well, we got all the arc, we got all the important stuff. So in terms of what the assassin,
I don't give a shit whatever it is. It's Archimedes' death ray.
It's Archimedes' death ray.
The assassin is like Rome and the Templars want Rome to get a death ray, because then the Roman Empire will spread
Star
across
Wars.
The entire world.
This is
and
just
be
Star
it.
Wars.
Yes, yes. The Templars want, again, the Templars definitely want
they
Roman.
Want the death ray.
Want the
they got the plans for the death ray.
The Templars
want a secret vent for the death ray. They have to fight.
The Templars want the Romans and the Roman form of Western imperial civilization to control the entire world. And yes, she, despite ruining her own name, stops Rome from getting a death ray.
Okay, because she realizes that Hannibal's just as bad, because Hannibal just wants the death ray to obliterate the Romans. Yes, it's just going to be a bloodbath either way.
Yes.
And so the assassins want the death ray destroyed, because they're like, it's too powerful.
Yes, and she gets close to Archimedes, and then you get this fun, like, Archimedes, like...
So Archimedes is this Greek mathematician. Was he around at this time?
Yeah, he dies during this war. He's in Sicily.
Okay, so Archimedes is her Obi-Wan Kenobi, for sure, right? Like, the...
You have your assassin who... Templar mentor who just makes her an assassin. I think one of her jobs is to go, she meets up, Archimedes is like her cue. If you're gonna do it, it's Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay, so you would do that.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, guys. Hold on. If what they're going after is Archimedes' death ray, she can't be Archimedes' buddy, because then she could just get the death ray.
You're right. I think that's the MacGuffin, is that they know that Rome is going after something powerful. They don't know what. That's your mystery that's going on through the movie. Why they're going to Rome in the first place? Why they're assassinating a guy? Like, they're trying to figure out Rome has some secret weapon they're trying to get, and they know there's something powerful. And then you reveal
Rome already has it.
No.
Like, just say that they've enslaved Archimedes to build it for them.
Yes.
On the island of Sicily. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. All right.
Yes.
Okay. So so at the start. Oh, my God. All right. I love this as the MacGuffin. All right. Hear me out. All right. Oh, my God. My head's going to explode. Okay. You would do Archimedes has designed the death ray because he is part of this whole fucking thing. He's an assassin or a Templar or whatever. He's probably an assassin because he wanted to be a good guy. He's been captured by the Templars. They want him to build this death ray. But to finish it, they need this piece of Isu technology, this Isu MacGuffin, right? The Eye of Isu or whatever, right? And that is this thing that is a treasure that you got to find all these clues to unearth, right? So Carthage, in his adventures, discovered a map to the Eye of Isu.
Hannibal.
And so that's why he's actually here, is to conduct a secret invasion to get this MacGuffin so that he can build his own death ray.
That's why he's trapezing around the countryside. He's collecting clues for this.
And this is how you bring it back to the modern time. Guys, we got this. We don't have the specifics, but we freaking got this, because it's the classic thing. The reason they're going through the Animus is they want the plans for the death ray, because in the future, the Templars, you know, your Mark Zuckerberg Templar character has that piece now, and all he needs now is the plan that Archimedes had. And what you're going to see is that what the assassin does is Archimedes in this wonderful thing, like you would even do, maybe they become friends, they destroy the plans of the death ray so nobody in history could ever get them. It's literally the Manhattan Project, but he was smart enough to fucking destroy them and make sure humanity never got the plans. So that's like why you're seeing this in the first place. That's what they are trying to do in the future or whatever, is get this information. But because of the heroic goodwill of the assassin, nobody ever got to see the plans. The Templar never got to Archimedes and got to see the plans. She got them and destroyed them beforehand.
Okay, so here's what you do. All right, this is very good. Because then essentially what she finds out is that Hannibal... So, like, we have the evil Roman guy, right? That's your sort of main antagonist. And then you have Hannibal. And then she finds out they're both part of the Templars. Because essentially, there's the cruel Roman badass who is the one who's enslaved Archimedes and is building the death ray, right? Like, oh, this guy fucking sucks. And then you also realize that... Hannibal, who's been ransacking Rome to go find this thing. Like, she's like, fucking Hannibal's gonna stop you. Like, Hannibal's, you know, like, he's gonna fucking, this is Roman suck or whatever, right? And then she realizes Hannibal is also a fucking Templar. He's the other side of the operation. Like, if anything, there'd be that devastating moment where she thinks Hannibal's gonna kill this guy, and then they shake hands, and he's like, yeah, I got the thing. And he's like, great, I'll put it in the death ray, right? Like, that seems like a fucking, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it's just about these assholes trying to find power. Meanwhile, how many thousands of millions of people are dying while these fucking power brokers are dicking everybody over, right? So then that's essentially her low moment, and then she brings that about because she doesn't listen to her mentor, because she still believes in Hannibal, right? She's like, I don't give a shit about your conspiracies and your whatever, right? So, like, you would do that the moment she... Okay, this is very good. The guy who stole the map originally was actually an assassin who was trying to get this map out of Hannibal's hands to stop him from finding the eye of whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why Hannibal doesn't immediately go to Rome, because now Hannibal has to go fucking find the eye on his own, and he's got different clues and stuff, and that's why he's going around killing everybody.
Yes, exactly.
So meanwhile, she's chased this guy to Rome. She's, you know, in the politics and the intrigue. She's still trying to hunt this guy down, and maybe he's not an assassin. He's an interloper or whatever, right? She and her assassin mentor are both looking for this MacGuffin, this map, and the assassin wants to destroy it, right? But she wants to get it and bring it back to Hannibal to redeem herself. Mm-hmm. So that's her low point, is that she betrays the assassin to go run back to Hannibal to give it to him, right? And so then she returns triumphantly to the army. She's like, hey, here's this thing. He's like, great, you've done well. You're my number one gal. And then she realizes he's working with the fucking Templars, who she's seen in Rome be fucked up assholes who want to build this death ray or whatever, right? And she's like, oh no, I made a horrible mistake. And then she gets fucking, she's with Hannibal, like, and then she has to, like, you know, go be an assassin on her own, and she's gonna have to fucking, you know, become an even more despised person in history, right? She maybe she does, she is the, oh, cause, oh, it's perfect, he's gonna bring the death ray to Carthage, to you know, to her home, and he's gonna wipe out her home to, you know, despite the who are the Romans or whatever, right? Some kind of zany thing like that. So she winds up being the person behind the scenes who frames his assassination, who dies a traitor to her cause, and who then, you know, fakes her death and becomes an assassin to protect the world from power hungry assholes.
Yes, and by the way, I think you can make the idea that it's Archimedes' death ray, like, there's something like cool in terms of then playing from the history to the future, where it's like two separate things are happening, like. The Templars and the Assassins both get kind of, you know, mystical sort of future prophecies from the Isu and stuff like that. So, like, the idea that they know if they get this eye, they know there's a great weapon that's going to happen in this war and they need to find it. I think nobody knows that at the same moment this is happening, there's a man in Sicily called Archimedes who is working on one of his many theories, is literally about to make the death ray. So the idea is, like, why are the Romans suddenly going to Sicily? Is like, they realize what this is. And the idea that she needs to kill Archimedes before anybody gets this information could be kind of the thing. Because it's also, like, that moment she gets there. He's like, who are you? She's like, I have to kill you. He's like, for what? What crime have I done? And she's like, looks at the sport. He's like, my God, you've almost solved it. And she, like, tells him, and he, like, nods and, like, realizes what she's here for. She's like, you're right. You need to kill me now. That sort of thing.
So she kill Archimedes?
Yeah, you could. That would be cool. Like, if you have an assassin, have her, because Archimedes dies in Sicily.
He dies. Supposedly, a Roman soldier busts in, and he was like, leave me alone. And the Roman soldier's like, yeah, fuck that, and kills him. But all we know is what was written some 70 years later by Polybius.
By Polybius, that's right. Before he became a crazy video game in the 80s.
It's also just very Assassin's Creed, the idea that when she talks, Archimedes kind of understands. Like, I'd put it this way, like, she's like, why haven't you finished it? He's like, I fear if I, like, finish this equation, like, I will destroy the world somehow. She's like, what? You could finish it and then destroy it. He's like, no, once it leaves my brain, it could be out there for somebody to find. And it's like, yeah, because even if you just wrote down that board, because the Animus, they would have solved it. But, like, he's smart enough to know, like, he can't ever let it leave his brain, because somehow in history, ideas have a way of being found once they're made real by putting it outside of your brain.
Oh, okay. All right. Then this would be the double twist. Let me hit you with this.
Let me hit you with this,
Matthew. What the people in the future are really looking for is the knife she killed Archimedes with, because it has his DNA, and it has the final secret to the fucking death ray, and then our dweeby Renaissance nerd has to fucking boss up and become a fucking assassin and delete the file off of Elon Musk's hard drive so that they can't fucking build the death ray. And then he gets contacted by someone being like, we'd like you to work for us.
He destroys the knife. He figures out the thing that Mark Zuckerberg was looking for the entire time was like on his wall of knives, essentially, like that sort of thing. Like they're looking for the answer, and then this guy discovers what would really give them the answer to the death ray, which is the knife that has the DNA of Archimedes on it. Yeah, but nobody knows, because nobody understands. Like everybody thinks that this is the story of how Archimedes died, but no, it's actually this sad. Because that's cool, because some of the things they do in the future is like Templars will have, you know, memorabilia from the assassins they've killed and stuff like that. So the idea that they have, oh yes, like literally you've seen this blade on like his pedestal or whatever. It's like he has the blade that killed Archimedes, but he doesn't know it. And then that's like your final act for our future guys. Like he destroys the blade and then he's given the job of being an assassin. Like he discovers the ultimate mystery in the future, which is the blade of Archimedes' blood will give Mark Zuckerberg the instructions how to make the Death Star. So
this feels so goofy and so, old history.
That's so good.
That it's perfect. That's all pretty, right, Assassin's,
that's pretty
Creed.
Assassin's Creed. I feel like we, again, there's a lot of kinks you need to iron out in there, but the story of this plucky badass horse girl who comes to Rome to be a hero that then gets sucked into a bunch of spy intrigue because she's chasing a map around, and then meanwhile, you know, fucking Hannibal is trying to get the fucking MacGuffin from the Isu while she's training to be an assassin in Rome, and then, you know, gets double-crossed and realizes that he's a Templar, and they're building Archimedes' death ray, and then that comes back to the future to the blood on the fucking blade that she stabbed Archimedes in the brain with.
You have this warrior girl who's like, who wants to have legacy, and you're dismantling the idea of great men of history, sort of view of history, where it's like, no, all these people, all these assholes who are running the world are assholes. It's the people on the ground who are really doing the stuff.
And what's more important is that we finally have an answer to all the historians who ask, why did Hannibal not march on Rome after the Battle of Cannae?
Because he was looking for the Eye of the Isu.
He was looking for the death ray.
Because he needed to scour the Roman countryside to gather clues which would lead him to a piece of alien technology to power Archimedes' death ray. Obviously. It's been under our noses the entire time. How could they have not seen this? It's right there in between the margins of history if you care to read it.
This would be my favorite Assassin's Creed game. We've done, maybe we did a game more than a movie. I don't care. This is everything I want in Assassin's Creed. We did it.
All right.
I'm very happy.
That was, I think, maybe the hardest story break we've ever done. That was like doing, imagine if we had to do Kingdom Hearts, but it was also about like fucking Henry
V. Love this one.
Like that was,
I will remember this one, whereas Kingdom Hearts, I can't even remember what we broke. That's how hard that one was.
I have 18 tabs though. Open right now of just like different Wikipedia articles. Like, to be clear, there's gonna be Roman history buffs who just take us to task for all the stuff that we missed or are wrong about or oversimplified.
Yeah,
we know
we come up with consultants. We'll hire historians to make the script, you know, kind of somewhat okay. Doesn't matter.
We know, whatever.
Man, oh man, good lord. Max Fun Drive is basically our sweeps week. So that's why you get these like fucking bangers. Just these banger episodes.
Yeah. Anyway, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you everybody who's gone out of their way to support this show and all the other great shows on the Max Fun Network. As a Max Fun member, you're the reason why we're here. You're the reason why other people get to listen to it. You put this show on your back, and in turn, we put your brains on our back with our dumb ideas. If you want to become a member, you can do so by heading over to MaximumFun.org/join. Please do so. Have a look at all the great things you can get and have, and just think about the value of being able to support great shows on a podcast network. That's worth more than any material good, even though you get material goods too.
Plus, you know, there's the bonus award of listening to Story Break and getting a Reader's Digest version of the History of Rome podcast by listening to our podcast. You got to listen to two podcasts in your podcast today, people.
Do strongly recommend the History of Rome. And then also Dan Carlin has a great mini series on the Punic Wars.
I mean, honestly, I feel like we pretty much did the History of Rome in like an hour. I feel like you kind of got it. I don't know if you need to go listen to the actual podcast now. We did it.
Thank you, Chad Ellis, for editing our podcast. You can find us on social at twitter.com/RJStoryBreak and bit.ly/StoryBreakFB. Will, any fan art?
Yes, we actually got a couple of incredibly cool pieces of fan art from potentially Rob on Twitter, who did two incredibly cool posters for our tiny house horror movie. Deeply creepy, this one with like a really cool logo treatment and the tagline, "Just get away from it all." So thank you very much to potentially Rob.
That's going
to
do it for us this week. Matt, can you take us out? Because I have a little piece of Roman history fact I want to end us with.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to end it with an Assassin's Creed statement, but we'll do both.
I'll take us out, and then you guys can both do your facts.
Okay.
Thank you so much to Maximum Fun for having us on their wonderful network. Thanks to all the Maximum Fun members, new and recurring and upgrading. Thank you to my co-hosts, and thanks, Chad Ellis, for cutting this podcast. All righty, then. See you next week. I'm Will Campos.
My name is Freddie Wong, and one of my favorite Roman battles is the Battle of Forum Gallorum. There was a place that was called Forum Gallorum. I laugh every time someone says it. The name of your stupid city is Forum Gallorum. It rhymes.
My name is Matthew Arnold, and as the assassins say, nothing is true. Everything is permitted.
Whoa.
Whatever the fuck that means.
Freaky deaky.
Forum. All right, bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.